Hey everybody, welcome to Back Issues, the only podcast with a roster larger than the Avengers. I'm your host, Jason. With me tonight, as usual, are Dick and Jamie. You guys want to introduce yourselves?
Hey, I'm Jamie. How's everybody going?
Hello, I am Dick. I'm here every week. I do the you know, the thing where I don't know anything about comics. That's me.
And we got a new cast member today. The man, the myth, the legend, the fucking British bastard himself, John.
Hello. I'm like the Vision, only a lot less good. But with an English accent. So that's an improvement, hey. Right there.
Well, tonight's comic, published by DC Vertigo, written by Grant Morrison, art by Frank Quitely, we got We Three. We Three is a story of three prototype animal weapons, Bandit, a dog, a.k.a. One, a cat named Tinker, a.k.a. Two, and a rabbit named Pirate, a.k.a. Three. These guys were all kidnapped from a nearby city and put in robot armor and given a bunch of, like, implants, and they could talk to a limited extent. But they're mostly living weapons. Each of the animals is up. You know, specifically for one role, like the cat is more stealth, the rabbit's more anti-personnel, and the dog functions like a tank. Well, the president goes to the facility to see this project and winds up decommissioning it, which was going to lead to the termination of the three animals. The main doctor, Dr. Roseanne Barry, finds herself unwilling to euthanize these animals, instead lets them loose, you know, hoping that they'll be, you know, killed and have a much more humane, but, you know an attempt at freedom, you know? Well, instead, the animals go on a small killing spree and escape. Outside the facility, they decide to look for home, but the problem is they don't know where home is. So they wander off into the forest and try to find this mythic home. Meantime, the lackeys left behind decide to send cybernetically enhanced rats after them. These rats work like a swarm of nanomachines on a larger scale. It's kind of creepy to look at. You know, the animals fight their way out of that. They rip apart the rats and explode a few and accidentally cause a explosion on the tracks, and the train gets derailed and falls into a lake, which leads to a really creepy scene with Bandit. He attempts to rescue the conductor and he sits there saying, "Am I a good boy?" But what you find out is the conductor's already quite dead. Really creepy scene. I love it though.
Yeah.
Bandit and Tinker, Pirate, you know. Bandit and Tinker meet back up with Pirate. Pirate's in a confrontation with this family who thinks it's an alien. So, I mean, it is, you know, a rabbit in a small mech suit. It's an easy to say, that's an alien at that point.
Yeah.
So, Pirate winds up getting shot. The rabbit gets getting shot through the head, which makes it so he can't talk anymore. Bandit and Tinker get pissed off and kill the family and their dog, but leave the youngest son alive. Once word of this gets back to the facility, they pull out We Four, an enhanced pit bull, which is about the size of an SUV. I mean, this thing is just creepy. It stands about 8 foot at the shoulder. It's got a massive pit bull in it, and it's got all these bionic enhancements. It's just very fucking, it's scary looking. Well, the other three animals wind up taking refuge with a homeless man, and the homeless man's, like, not put off by them at all. He sits there and pets them, you know, tells Bandit he's a good boy and all that shit. And the homeless man leaves, and encounters the military who are trying to escort him from the area and find these animals. And in a moment of pure dislike beauty, the homeless man's like, I didn't see a thing, you fucking pig. You know, just completely insults the guy, gives him the finger kind of thing. So they send the homeless man on his way, not knowing that he had been sheltering the three prototypes. Well, the military lets out this gigantic pit bull bot, and the pit bull bot kills Pirate the Rabbit and makes him detonate. It's kind of a chilling scene. And in the end, what wins the day is Dr. Barry shows up and calls Wee One Bandit by his real name, like for the first time kind of thing. He had been, you know, had his identity stripped and replaced with Weapon One. But when Barry calls him Bandit, he starts, you know, kind of getting it back. And the military's got snipers set up the whole nine yards. And the snipers, you know, prepare to shoot Bandit. But Barry realizes what's going on, jumps in the way, kind of gets Bandit to back off. And she takes all the rounds directly to the back. Bandit and Tinker get really pissed off about this and proceed to attack Weapon 4. And they're, you know, holding their own as best as they can. And this fight moves to the highway. Weapon 4 tries to attack a police officer even, while the officer's just trying to figure out what the hell's going on and try to contain it. Bandit managed to rescue the police officer, and the military, realizing what they've done and how fucked up it really is, turn around and all shoot the pit bull, leaving Bandit and Tinker alone. They wind up, you know, figuring out how to shed the arm or pull it off of them kind of thing. So you're left with a cat and a dog with all these metal parts sticking out of them. They look like a science experiment because obviously that's what they are. But they look like they've been abused and just neglected. Because, again, they were treated as weapons and not animals. So they shed their armor and escape. The director of the organization that created them, military organization, finds them, but he has a moment where he realizes kind of what he had done. And instead of euthanizing the animals, he takes out the remaining cybernetic pieces and then has like a complete 180 and speaks out against the actions of this project. And in a very touching ending, you find out that Trendle, the head doctor, gave Bandit and Tinker to the old homeless dude that had kept them hidden, and makes a really great comment at the end about how well behaved the animals are. He then pulls out his wallet, hands over a stack of $100 bills, and hands it to the homeless dude, and then leaves, and the comic just ends. Really simple plot, but very effective. So what'd you guys think?
Well, yeah, the feels. Wow. You know, it's a short comic, very concise, very light on dialogue, but let's be honest, that was painfully sad to watch, and just, yeah, not so much in a depressing sort of way. It's more like why would they do this thing to begin with? Yeah, what could go wrong? What could possibly go wrong with this? Everything. Yeah, I mean, it was depressing. You know, it's just like, you know, you look at how, you know, and not to say, I'm sure it's making me a better way to put it, how the machinery, you know, dehumanizes people, so to speak. And even though we're not dealing with humans, you know, you still see that, you know, it takes away what they are. and you're making them into weapons, and you know, but there's still an intelligence there. If it isn't a human intelligence, there's still an intelligence, and it's being, you know, how do I put this? Sort of, it's kind of like a robotic slavery, so to speak. You think about it, you know, you're not the person in the armor. You know, they almost feel like they don't have control over their actions until they do, and then all of a sudden, you know, what's their reward for wanting to be free? The military tries to kill them.
Yeah.
And you have to feed, because you mentioned the family that runs into him and tries to shoot
shoot the rabbit.
They actually does shoot the rabbit, and it's like, you know, I'm not sure any of us would have reacted differently in that situation. You know, you're scared.
Mm-hmm.
Even then, it's like a program response.
Exactly.
And, you know, I think, you know, you can see that the intelligence is still there, though. I mean, he tries to save the engineer, even though, you know, it's a futile gesture. But, you know, that's what he wants to do. That's what a dog does. It saves people.
Yeah.
Saves its pack, or, you know.
And I think that whole series of events really puts down how much character Grant Morrison put in these animals. Because Bandit's always concerned with, is he being a good boy, you know?
Yeah.
He wants the recognition and the praise for doing the right thing. Just like, you know, for those of us who actually have dogs, our dogs at home.
Right. I didn't quite get the whole thing with the cat going stink all the time. I'm not sure what that
was. It has to do with the sense of smell of the cat.
Oh, it smells.
To Tinker, all humans stink. Because, I mean, look at all the chemicals he put on ourselves to try to, quote-unquote, smell good.
Well, not only that, but you also have to take a look at it as well, what Tink has been through and everything with the whole fucking experience and everything. So, of course, Tink is going to have a natural aversion to humans. Plus the fact that, you know, it literally, cats are assholes. Cats do not like you. That's just a fact. And so him constantly calling them stink is kind of Grant's way of saying, well, you know, cats are usually little assholes. So let's go ahead and let's tie that into the character as best as we can.
Well, I can make a quick addendum to that. Cats are assholes until they want something.
Yep.
Then they love you.
So cats are a lot like women.
Oh, I'm going to have to smack you later.
Yeah, Dick, what was your takeaway of all this?
Well, honestly, I'm fucking impressed at how quickly Grant managed to not only build a universe and write a story, but execute that story in such a way that you actually feel for the characters and feel for the events, and just, it just hurts, you know? It's very sad. It's one of the saddest comics I've ever read, and it's only 3 fucking issues. I literally had it read in 7 minutes, and I had to cry for a good 5 minutes afterward because I was just so sad, because, like, it ends on a somewhat happy note, but at the same time, it's just, it's amazing how much Grant manages to build into these characters and build into the universe and everything that just makes you really hooked in. I kind of wanted more, to be completely honest, but, you know, that's kind of the beauty of it as well, is that there's just enough for it to have that effect on you. I think if it was drawn out too much longer, it wouldn't be as powerful or as satisfying.
Well, John, I know this isn't your first time reading it.
It's most certainly not, no.
I think it's my 3rd or 4th reading it, personally. Because it is that good of a story.
Yeah, it's one of those comic books that I always come back to, you know, after a few years not reading it. It's just on my shelf. And it's usually in between, you know, if I finish something like Preacher or Saga or something, you know, big and intricate. It's one of those ones that I'm always like, yeah, I could read that. It won't take me too long. But because I know what it's about, and I know the subject matter, and I know certainly how it made me feel for the first time I read it. It's one of those books that I've not read as much as a lot of others because it still impacts me really, in a real strong way even now. And this time reading it for this episode was no different whatsoever. It is a brutal comic. Like, it's so amazing how much Grant Morrison gets out of such a little amount of paper, you know? It's like Dick said, it's so well fleshed out, the universe that he's made. It's so well written. The characters, you get them straight away. Everyone's familiar with dogs. Everyone's familiar with cats, rabbits, and ultimately humans. So they all know what a dog's like, basically, and they all know what a cat's like. And it's just used that to make these characters so much more believable. You know, you read it, and for the first time you have the speech of where Two's going, like, stink, human stink, and Bandit just wants to be a good dog. You just get it, and you accept it, and you understand it. And the way he did it, I think, was brilliant as well. And yeah, it's so difficult to read. I remember I read it for the first time about 6 years ago. And it reminds me of a book that hopefully we'll get to do in one of these issues at some point. But Jason, if you've ever read Pride of Baghdad.
That's actually on our to-do list.
Yeah, that is a very similar kind of, well, not similar story, but the themes in it are very similar to We Three as well. And those two, they're really difficult reads, and this was no exception.
Well, I mean, hard reads, we're no stranger to those. I mean, our second episode, we jumped in and did Mouse.
Absolutely.
I mean, we're not going to shy away just because the story's sad.
Exactly, and you shouldn't, because that's where the most powerful and impactful comic books come from, is doing something maybe a little bit different and a bit, you know, off the wall, putting animals in basically walking mech suits. Yes, quite a novel concept. But to get, like, such a good story out of it is just an amazing example of what comics can do, really. And yeah, I love it. I think it's absolutely fantastic.
Now, the big thing for me, it's the combination of, you know, Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely, two people who, you know, work together so well. I mean, the work on, like, New X-Men was, like, say what you will about that run of New X-Men, the art always went well with the story, you know? And I think here it's no different. The art is fitting and amazing. The animals, all, first off, you can tell what they are, which with some artists you can't. And they're expressive. You know, as much as an animal can be expressive. Like, when you see Weapon 4, and he's just sitting there with his tongue hanging out, he looks sinister. He looks like a dog fighting dog, you know? Like, you can tell this thing is going to rip something apart. You look at Tinker, and Tinker always looks pissed off. Bandit always looks like he's, you know, kind of a semi-dopey-looking dog who just wants to be, you know, doing the right thing and being recognized for it. There's so much character to just how the animals look. But that's just my two cents. What did you guys think of the art?
I think it was just, you know, it was beautiful, brilliant, and you know, there's a lot of emotion in that art design. I really love how much emotion he's able to get out of these characters. But you know, on the flip side, things get dark and gory and bloody, and especially, you know, what really bugged the thing that really bugged me was the rat. With the drill on its head, and I, when I say bug, not bug in a sense that it annoyed me, it says it just kind of made my skin crawl.
It was disturbing,
you know. Yeah, very disturbing, and I view that as a positive, because if art manages to get that kind of response out of you, then it is really good.
Well, not only that, the other thing that I really liked that Grant was really smart about with this as well was that he made sure to give the story the depth that it needed without drawing it out too far. All the characters, including even the politicians and everything, are all written within a sort of, not so much stereotype, but a template in such a way that they're believable. And they're all written and written closely together in such a way that the entire story as an arc and everything really can have that effect on you. And that's what's beautiful about it, is that it's such a short thing. You know, it's such a short three issues. I think it's less than 60 pages.
No, it's 104.
Okay, so it's only 100 pages. You know, you're going to read more for your standard high school, you know, reading for a project or a book report or some shit than that or whatever, you know, what have you. It's a very short read, but what Grant manages to achieve in that period, in that whole time frame, is just amazing. There's multiple little bits of story, you know, several different crescendos. Everything is all timed really well. It's all paced really well. Nothing seems like it's touched on for too shortly, and yet everything is only touched on for a very brief moment. It's a very interesting look at a comic and a very interesting little slice of life, as it were, but not so much in the anime sort of stereotype, as it were, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I see what you're going for. I'd like to touch on one thing, though, that was amazing about this and heartbreaking. Each of the covers of the individual issues... each cover is a lost animal poster for one of the three main animals. And they give you a little bit of backstory, like how the family feels about these animals being missing. And it's always, you know, a feeling of loss that the animal's there, which really kind of sits with you and makes you think, what kind of fucking monsters would have a program like this where they're stealing animals from families and turning them into weapons?
Yeah, that's just, that really just, you know, it really kind of filled me with utter disgust to think, you know, because you know shit like this, I don't have any examples, but you know shit like this probably happens.
Dogs
in dark corners where you don't hear about
World War One, I think. They had dogs that blew up tanks. And this shit like that, it's just... there's been multiple plans that never come through, like using bats to firebomb shit and stuff like that. Like they always come across our paths, but rarely do you see them come off the planning stages, because there is a certain inhumanity about it.
Yeah, and it's. Yeah, because that goes back right back to what I was saying. He's like, you know, it shows this. My thing is, you know, I understand that, you know, they have to test things like medicines on animals. I don't like it, but, you know, as someone would say that, you know, should we test it on humans first? And, you know, I understand the reasoning, but it still comes off as coarse and with a total disregard for life in general. And this is what's painted here is just kind of taking that to the extreme, where you've just taken three lives, and augmented them and automated them to the point where there's a question of what they are now.
And I think narrative actually toyed on that really well, because you do kind of say at what point are they no longer animals, you know. But once they start showing their own personality, right off the bat, you're just like, okay, they are.
And I really like that too, because really that really fucks with your brain if you look at it, because it's like, wow, what the fuck? Like, you know, you see these animals and they're just normal fucking animals, and yet you have, you know, this disconnect between them and everything, and it's just like, well, fuck. You know, like that wasn't what I was expecting. Ouch. You know, it's just like you see these animals inside of these robot suits, and immediately, at least for me, my first reaction was going to be, oh, they're going to be very robotic and very, you know, without any personality or anything, and it's gonna you know, it's going to be just a sort of weird, what if we started making biological weapons, and then they show that they can talk and everything, and it's just like, oh, well, fuck, okay, this is about to be completely what I wasn't expecting, and that sort of, it's almost a bait and switch in a way. It sets you up for what you think is going to be something about, you know, crazy science shit, and then it turns into one of the saddest yet most satisfying comics I've read in a long time.
I think, what's good about that is that it leaves a lot unanswered, which is in most cases, you know, not what you want. But in this case, I think it was really effective because you're not really sure, like, did making them these weapons, did that give them so much more intelligence to be these, you know, animals and going off and exploring and trying to find their own freedom? Or is that just something that's already there that they are, that, you know, that's just the animals in a nature? So there's this weird, like, did they create like an almost intelligence that wants freedom, or is that just an inherent thing of being alive? And I'm glad that they didn't like go into that. They just kind of hinted at it, especially with the doctor, the actions of the doctor. She was like, no, I want to set them free or whatever, go and have freedom. But she never knew what that meant, really, because she didn't know how much they understood about freedom. And really, the audience doesn't know by the end what they understand about freedom, because they end up just as animals again. And is that better or worse for them? We'll you know, we won't know that. And that's really effective. It really raises some quite interesting things, especially when it comes to stuff like animal testing and everything like that.
Yeah. And see, that's why I wanted you on here, because I would never have thought of that point. I don't know if Jamie or Dick ever looked at it from that angle either, you know?
Oh.
I'm going to be perfectly honest. I hadn't even considered that, but now I'm thinking about it, and I'm like, fuck, John, Jesus.
Yeah, it took me a few reads to get that, because it's one of those books that's, there's so many layers to it. You can read it as like, oh, this is a weird thing about weapons or something, or, you know, another time it's about just the animals and what they're going through, and there's so much to it. It's really quite fascinating just to go back and look, and I've still got so many questions about it that you know, we could talk about for hours, but yeah, that was one that I think is particularly interesting. Just to, my mind changes every time I read it.
Yeah,
you know, like how much the animals are aware of and how much they've been sort of heightened to this intelligence where they become aware of things. So it's like, well, they're just basically humans now or some stuff like that. It's pretty good to go back and read a book and get something different out of it every time, which I think this is one you definitely can do.
Yeah, it's like I said, this is the third or fourth time I've read it, and every time I pull out just a little more, you know? And it's a really good play on, you know, we've had stories like this where humans get turned into these war machines, you know? I mean, yeah, you could even definitely dumb it down so far as Iron Man, dude, you know?
Well, yeah, no, I mean, that's literally the cornerstone of Iron Man's character, and it's a very, very predominant trope in any of those sorts of kinds of things where you have people who better themselves through technology. I mean, if you kind of want to look at it in a sort of dark and gruesome way, another superhero who's not really a comic hero, but Static Shock.
Static is a comic hero, kind of, you asshole. Yes.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, he is.
Okay, my bad. I didn't know. I'm just familiar with the TV show on Warner Brothers.
He was a member of the Justice League for a while. Don't
get mad at me, guys.
He was part of a sub-imprint of DC called Milestone, which was predominantly African-American and dealt with African-American issues. However,
it got canceled. I'm fulfilling my part of being the guy who doesn't know comics, so... But I think my point still kind of stands, though, is that Static kind of, you know, throughout the what I saw, the comic, not the comic, the cartoon, is, you know, he starts out as wanting to be this hero, and then he gets wrapped up in a whole bunch of crazy-ass shit, you know, and fucking, like, you know, it goes from just him being a hero to having his own team and everything, and he ends up getting involved in a war with a whole bunch of supervillains and stuff that used to be gangsters, used to be criminals and stuff, and he kind of regrets having his powers at one point. So, you know, this theme is definitely explored in various mediums, but never so brashly as it is here, where literally it's animals, you know, fuzzy pets, things that you love, and, you know, you feed it, and you take it outside to go potty and stuff, and all this sort of stuff, and you're supposed to love these sort of things, and they've had that stripped away from them, and they've been turned into these killing machines. It really has more of an impact than, say, Iron Man would, in terms of the emotions department, at least.
And another part that I thought was notable is they had turned them into killing machines, but the moment they were allowed to express their own free will, they immediately were back to the old animal instincts, home, comfort, you know, the people that wanted them there.
Exactly.
And I think that was, you know, a powerful statement. You can turn them into weapons, but they're still, at the end of the day, animals.
I would think anyone, you know, who was forced into a place where they wouldn't want to be, would have that kind of a notion. I mean, I think that goes for people as well, not just, you know, well, most people. I don't know. I can't
say, if they did that to me, I'd turn around and kill all of them with it. You know, I wouldn't try to run out. I'd be, look what you've done to me, I'm not a person anymore, which is, you know, a common trope with this kind of situation. And I think, you know, Grant Morrison did a real good job of subverting it and saying, while they are weapons, they're animals. They have their own wants and needs. They don't want revenge. They want freedom and safety.
And that kind of goes back to a point I was making earlier. I was out, you know, the thing with animal testing is that they get treated like they're not alive. Like they're not beings with actual instincts or thought processes. And that's not the case. And, you know, it's actually also just something about, you know, kind of how dehumanizing, as you pointed out, is the super tech of technology is, if you're going to go down routes like that, where does it end? You know, when do we say enough is too much? Like, you know, like in Jurassic Park, where the scientists are so worried about whether or not they could do it, they didn't think, you know, it's not what they should.
And that's always a big moral and ethical question, is we can do it, but should we? And to me, this book alone just makes me stop and say, no, we fucking should not do this stuff.
Yeah, that's just barbaric, in my opinion, no matter how advanced the technology is.
Yeah, no, it really kind of fucks with this whole idea of science being good. I mean, usually science is a good thing, 9 times out of 10, in my opinion, but there's definitely the potential for it to be misused, and this really explores that theme in such a way that kind of is just really fucks with you, man. It really, like, rips right at your brain and says, fuck you, you know, and says, you know, this is the brutal kind of shit that's going to happen, and it's just like, fuck, man. I wasn't ready for the themes explored in this shit, and that shit just it fucked my brain up, man. I'm not gonna lie. I seriously had some problems there at the end of that whole thing, because it was just like, well, are you serious right now? Like did you really just make me feel all these things? Curse you, Grant! Fucking you bastard!
Now I want to bring a chilling idea to you guys. When this came out, it was actually optioned as a movie.
Yeah, and they're thinking of remaking it again. Yeah. I just checked on the wiki.
Yeah, the last news is James Gunn expressed interest in it. I don't know that I could sit through this movie.
I don't know Jesus, either. That would be so sad.
It's like I said to you after I finished reading it. I said, Jesus Christ, this is like a Watership Down with cyborgs.
Absolutely, I
think John's going to be the one that recognizes this reference more. I think it's more Plague Dogs.
Oh, God.
Plague Dogs? Oh, my God.
I don't know.
It didn't get a proper release in the U.S. It got a very heavily edited version. But it made Watership Down look downright happy. It was Like, I spent the whole time just fucking bawling my eyes out. Not that I didn't with Wii 3. I will admit, the first two times I read it, I was a wreck for like a couple days afterwards. But Plague Dogs is just above and beyond. But, I mean, the idea of this as a movie, that would be traumatizing to so many people.
I don't think it would do very well, because the initial reviews would come out and all the reviewers would have killed themselves after they put their review out.
Well, I think the reviews would just be like, well, I don't get it.
Yeah.
It's animals and they're just like killing people. I don't understand like what's happening, because it's like a really hard sell to make. I want to make a movie about three pets, you know, that have been kidnapped, put into these mech suits, and they just go around killing people. Who's going to make that? I mean, James Gunn has expressed interest, and like, I guess he'd be the best person to do it, maybe. But
yeah, well, you want to make a movie like this, you don't want it to fall into your usual slasher horror genre, because that would just kill any of the feeling involved.
I'm going to say it would not work well to me as a movie, but if you made it like a 4 or 5 episode miniseries on like HBO. I think you could actually delve further into the subtext and the themes while still doing a good job with the original, you know?
I was thinking maybe, because there's really not a lot to you know, as it stands as a comic book. And really to do it as a movie would just rob it of the message, I think, because it'd just be like, oh, well, if someone decided to do it, they'd pretty much make it like Deadpool. Really, they turn it into a big explosive action parody. Right. Oh my god! Look at all the people dying because of this rabbit. No, it can't be like that. It's not that kind of thing at all.
It would become Pet Sematary, and I don't think
exactly that would. So what I'd do is, if someone put a gun to my head and said, "Right, make this into some sort of other thing," you know, other than a comic book, I'd probably do like a 90-minute HBO special or something. Low budget, like really low, enough to get the costumes to look good, but in that way you'd be limited by the time and the resources you had, so you couldn't turn it into anything other than what it is now. It'd just be this small contained story about these three characters, these three animals, and you'd just make it like nice and tense and dramatic and claustrophobic, and they wouldn't have any, you know, impetus to go and do a big explosive action scene at the end that doesn't make any sense. It doesn't fit in the story and the message it's trying to get across. But really, though, that's kind of, I don't think you need it. I don't think it's something that, it's one of the few comic books that I read and I was just like, nah, that's absolutely perfect the way it is. Another comic book I thought that about, interestingly enough, was by the same two creators of this, and that was All-Star Superman.
They did All-Star Superman, and it wasn't bad.
They did that as a, was it a animated animated movie? It was fine. It was decent. But at the time I just read it and I thought, that's a perfect Superman comic book.
Like,
12 issues.
You know me, John. I hate Superman. I love All-Star Superman.
All-Star, for people who hate Superman, All-Star Superman is absolutely what to read. And again, it's by Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely, same team that did Wii 3. And it's a lot less brutal, even though some places actually it gets quite...
Yeah, it gets there.
Quite brutal. But yeah, much like that, though, I think Wii 3 is a comic that's just perfect.
Yeah.
As it stands at the minute. And I don't think you'd need to do it as a... anything other than what it is now. I mean, maybe a nice reprint, but that's all I can think of.
It fits the whole idea of sometimes the medium can't be changed without losing the message.
Yeah.
Like, part of me does want to see a movie because it would be kind of interesting to see how this would play out like live in front of you, but I don't want it. I think it would lose all of the subtext, all the stuff that makes you think. And I think it would be way too easy to turn it into some kind of bullshit PETA activism thing, you know?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. There's no way to do this as a movie without ruining it. It's just that's just the long and short of it. You can't take something that hits you in the way that even any sort of a comic really does and convey it on the screen as well as it was in that comic, if that makes
Yeah.
sense.
And I agree completely. It's so much of the worth of this comic is wrapped up in the medium. It's the fact that it is a comic and you can tell a story in a much more dynamic way than you can with a movie. Then I'll be honest, there would be something extremely hokey about a movie version just having these animals talking. It'd be too homeward bound, you know? It'd be too humanizing at a point where humanity is not the question. So I think it's a good thing it's never come to fruition as a movie. But and it's another point where you also have to say not all comics need to be movies or TV shows or this, that, or the other. The medium stands on its own. And I think this is one of the comics I would put forth as to why we don't need movies, we don't need TV, we just need the comic. But I mean, I'll get off my soapbox on that one.
Well, I think that one of the reasons a lot of this stuff goes to TV is because, we are kind of living in an age of instant entertainment. And I think a lot of people are just straight too lazy to read the comic. A lot of cases, which is kind of sad.
Now, I want to pose a question to you guys. This one's gonna be might be a little hard. Knowing what you know about this comic and how, let's face it, it's depressing. Could you really say to like the audience, go out and read this? Or
I would say yes, read it, but be aware it's gonna have a lasting impact on you. And it's not gonna be, something like your average superhero comic. It's gonna be something that
Yeah.
it's not gonna I have a hard time putting this in the world. It's kind of something you watch for the same reason you'd watch like a movie like Project X. Because, the message is there, and you're looking for a story where your view of the world is challenged. Not that Project X was a particularly good movie.
No, but it did it yeah.
That did the
Yeah.
message job well.
Because, like, I know when I chose this for the show, John and I were off in the corner laughing, going, I'm going to fucking break them with this. Like, I really set out to really put it to you and Dick specifically, Jamie. Because this is one of those things, you read it, you're not the same person after.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to. I didn't even want to tell you guys what it was about. I just wanted you to go in blind, you know?
Yeah.
Well, because that's how I went into it. I don't know about you, John, but I got it when it originally came out in the 3-issue format.
I got it about a year after it came out on trade. Just someone said you have to read this, and that's all I knew about it.
Yep. And I did that. I got all 3 issues and I read it and I'm just like, oh my God. And I brought it to my friends who were comic, fans at the time. And I'm like, read this. I nearly did not get those comics back. One of the women I'd given it to read wanted to burn them because they were that fucking depressing to her.
That's a I don't like that reaction in people that they want to just destroy something
Well,
because
no,
they
I understand your reasoning. It wasn't destroy it because it was depressing. Destroy it because the physical copy she had in her possession because it did fuck with her that much.
but that's the but yeah that to me stands out as a good that when media is good when it makes you have to think and feel things you might not necessarily want to think. And it's not necessary for all media to do that, but I think it just stands out, when it does that.
Yeah. And I've it's weird to say, but at the same time, I think John probably backed me up on this too. A lot of the comics that give that reaction to me are Vertigo.
No, absolutely.
Like, DC had the best idea they could have had when they said, let's do Vertigo.
Yeah, it seemed like they went, well, we've kind of got this weird side universe that we don't want to integrate into the regular, you know, DCU. So let's just spin it off, which is the best, like I said, it's the best thing they could have done, because we've got some of the most seminal and amazing comics we've ever, ever had in the history of, well, the medium, really, entirely. Particular note for me is obviously going to be Sandman.
Oh, yeah.
In my opinion, one of the greatest things ever, regardless of comics. It's just astonishing. And hope to be able to talk a lot about that on one of these episodes.
Oh, you know we will.
Fairly soon. Excellent. And, yeah, we got stuff like, you know, V for Vendetta. Eventually, Transmet was released on it, even though it wasn't at first.
It started
eventually became. Yeah, it became part of Vertigo, I think, by the end. And, you know, Constantine, or Hellblazer, as it used to be. It's just all these really dark stories where you could just, the writers could let their imaginations run wild and do whatever they wanted. And you get stuff like Sandman and, you know, things like that. And it's just, it's really kind of, in a lot of ways, it's helped me grow as a person, because when I was younger, I was, you know, into Spider-Man and Batman, like most people who read comics are. But I never really experienced what the medium could actually do until I went onto Vertigo when I was about 18 or 19. And it just absolutely blew my mind. Just this, how different it was from, you know, oh, save the day, that guy's robbing a bank. Well, in this case, it's like, don't save the day. Everyone dies by getting things pierced through your eyeballs. And as an 18-year-old, I think that's what I wanted to read.
Yep. That's about the same time I got into Vertigo. With me, it was Sandman, too. Like, that was my that was my entry point. And I sat there saying, they're finally giving place for writers to be artists, to tell a story that isn't the good guy always wins the day, to go deeper into the psychology of character, you know? And I think that's what Vertigo's always been really good with. Very, very character-driven storylines. And as we saw with Week 3, it doesn't always have to be, you know, a human or a anthropomorphized, you know, whatever, or a god or an abstract. It can be as simple as an animal, you know? But yeah, for a last little bit, there's something that bugged me about this more than anything. It's like, we live in a world where you turn on TV, you're going to see PETA, ASPCA, all these animal rights groups, and all they do is bombard you with images of these sad, dejected-looking animals, right? And it's supposed to make you feel bad, and it works. But at the same time, We Three did all of the same ideas, made you feel for the animals, but it did it without going too far, like some of these commercials do, you know?
Yeah, I think one of the problems with those commercials is that they play them so often, and they're always the same message. A lot, after the first couple of viewings, you get desensitized to them, and you just want to turn them off. It's like, oh, don't show me this again. Whereas, you know, We Three has such a powerful message, you don't need it banged into your head many times in such an effective way. That comic, you know, delivered its message far better than any than they could make thousands of those commercials. They would not deliver the message as well
and
as
like
that,
you
as
said,
We Three.
You know, you see these commercials so many times, you just tune it out or turn it off or change the channel.
Yeah.
We Three, like, John and I have both read this comic multiple times each, and it still has the same impact with us. Even, you know, I could probably read this comic, you know, once a year for the rest of my life, and it would still feel the same. Unlike the commercials, which just, my whole takeaway from the commercials is, you know, shelters have a bunch of sad animals, and fuck you, Sarah McLachlan.
Yeah. Or whoever's doing it this week. They get somebody new every week.
But it's always got Sarah McLachlan's music over it. It's like she's literally the most depressing musician alive.
Yeah, alive. There's been a few.
Yeah, but they had the good sense to kill themselves. Yeah.
Or die.
Well, drug overdoses, alcoholism, you know. The usual.
Already ran one or died of cancer.
But I think this got the message across better than any ASPCA commercial could ever.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And it does it in a way that even if you're not an animal person, there's something in this comic you're going to want to read. You know, there's military experiments, you know, mechs. There's there's other appeals other than the straight pathos.
And you know, I think that's the strength of it, is, you know, you do take the message and you properly frame it in a good story. That's what really helps get things through.
Exactly. Couldn't have put it better. But yeah. So, looking back on this now, this is specifically for Jamie and Dick. You think you're ever going to reread this?
Probably at least a couple times. I have to say, that's definitely something that I've been looking into doing again, because that was fucking sad, and it fucking made me feel bad, but I definitely would appreciate another opportunity to read it.
I was thinking about rereading. I might even do fan art.
Oh.
I mean, I just, you know, I was blown away, and I really wanted to look, you know, I like how these characters... You know, I think that's one of the things is you take a dog, you take a cat, and you take a rabbit, and you give them, and you know, you have them have a minimal amount of functioning communication ability, and somehow it just makes them all the more, not just relatable, but sympathetic. And I might want to, you know, take a chance to just draw them out with my own hand and see how that comes out. And please don't hold me to that, because I often say something like that a lot, and I'm not doing it. So,
to be fair, at one point that's how back issues was. It was something I kept telling Dick I was going to do, and I never did it for like a year. Until he finally said, fucking do it.
Do it. Do it, faggot.
But yeah, I'll be honest, I'm debating hunting down the 2011 re-release. With the extra 40 pages of material. Because I want to see, you know... I love, like, in trade paperbacks. I don't know about you, John. But, like, reading the intros and the interviews and stuff they have in them with the creators. You know, just seeing the mindsets and what brought them to this point. That's always... That's as interesting as hell to me.
For me, it depends a lot on the writer. Frank Quitely and Grant Morrison, they're always two people I'm really interested in hearing their inspirations and ideas for what they've done. So this is the... Is it 2011?
The
Deluxe edition. Yeah, that's something I'd be really interested in seeing. I've got the 2000... Well, the one that came out straight
2005.
After...
2005.
Straight after the run. Yeah, straight after the run. I've got that version, but I'd love to, you know, get some of the more backstage stuff, like the concept art and the scripts and the notes and everything. I think that'd be really good.
That was actually an interest that Neil Gaiman gave me, because I started reading his back stuff in like the collected volumes of Sandman, you know, where he'd give interviews or just do a sit down, and it's like, wow, the creative process in this is fucking amazing. And I'd love to get more into Grant Morrison's head, honestly.
I think it was one thing that we glossed over, and I think I'd like to bring that up, is Dr. Barry and her sacrifice. Mm. And, you know, that seemed to be a really sad point, too. Because I think she, you know, partially, you know, not just to give her, you know, to protect the animals that I think she really loved, but she also, I think she also had the knowledge that she was going to jail, or probably worse,
military prison.
You know, Oh, yeah. God only knows what they would have done to her. And, you know, you really feel for her, you know, when you see her getting the shot in the back by snipers, just how, to tie it all in, I think, you know, I was pretty sad after reading it, but I think I'd be even more depressed to sit here thinking about it.
Yeah.
You know, it really is just, you know, and I want to, again, stress for the record that I think that's a good thing.
I want to point something out. Anybody who's actually listened to us for any length of time knows I can make a joke out of anything. I made cancer jokes during the death of Captain Marvel. I cannot make a joke about this. It's just not, it's beyond my abilities. I can't poke fun at it, even, you know, lightheartedly. It just, it's too powerful of a story and way too, like, I mean, I got two dogs laying at my feet right now as I'm recording all of this. And I can't help but look at them and be like, I would never let someone do that shit to my dog.
You know, there's an interesting side story to this. I don't know if any of you follow Yandere Simulator. It's a development. Let's just say there's been a lot, you know. It's, well, exactly what it says on the tin. Basically, you're a Yandere girl. You go around killing other students because you don't want them to get near your senpai. And in recent development, that game's just kind of gorier and gorier. Now, in his last update that he released, he added you could kidnap one girl, you could kidnap a girl, torture her, and make her kill someone else.
That's fucked up.
And it's not more fucked up than the pages he made where he actually makes the bind slave knock the girl down, get on top of her, stab her like a whole bunch of times. And then kill themselves in a humongous fountain of arterial squirt blood. Now, I'm only telling you this because the other thing that he added was a change to the mechanics. He added a new mechanic for corpse disposal, which is burying them in the school garden. And he said that, you know, if that was too easy to do it that way. So he wanted to add some reason because they could find the corpse with a police dog. So to throw the police dog off, he added the ability to find small animals like kittens or squirrels and murder them and bury them over the corpse.
So you're literally saying to hide the generic game mechanic of killing people, he went to mild levels of psychopathy? Let's start killing animals. That's
No. That's not my point.
I'm taking away from this, though.
Well, yeah. Well, it's a brilliant. It's brilliant in thought. But what I wanted to get at is there was a backlash, not against the because for the cat, you didn't even show killing a kitten. You just said it could be done, and there was a huge backlash against that. And this is the same video where he showed a mind broken slave girl doing a murder suicide.
Huh. I do not want.
And no one batted an eyelash at that. I have played it. It's pretty twisted.
I mean, that's saying something when I don't want to play a sick and twisted video game.
It's not as bad as you think. It's more of a stealth game. It's not just going around hacking people up. But yeah, it's definitely something. Yeah, they definitely get into the psychopathy angle in a lot of ways that are very,
I will be avoiding that one, though. Yeah.
All right. Well, I just wanted to make the comparison because it seemed to me that there were a lot more people upset about killing a cat.
I'll be honest. I've killed more humans in video games than have ever existed throughout history, and it doesn't bug me. Even like in like old games like Wolfenstein, where it's really simply done, I had a hard time bringing myself to kill the dogs.
Yeah.
But yeah. Ugh. On that note, another episode in the can, guys. That job well done.
I think we done good.
Yeah, I had a great time talking about it.
Yeah, that was a really good comic and a good conversation. And I think, guys.
Unlike, yeah.
Even got the plug a murder suicide and I game. Think,
unlike a lot of our other episodes, I'm not going to recommend this straight out. I am going to say definitely before you go out and buy it, maybe do a little bit of reading on it. Because I can see where this would be hard for a lot of people to swallow.
I say yes, go out and read it, and read it because it's hard on your hard on your emotions.
Further to that point, and one that Jamie made earlier, if you watched when you were growing up Watership Down, and you weren't completely scarred by it, then go ahead and read We Three.
So let's count.
You were scarred by Watership Down. You're not.
Well, let's just count this as recommended, but with a very strong word of warning. But yeah, this has been Back Issues. I'm there. Jason. With me have been Jamie, Dick, and John. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll see you next week.